Hey, hello everybody. This is Dr. Rita Marie Valscalzo, and I want to welcome you today on this beautiful Austin sunny day to our conference call with our very, very special guest, Sergey Bochenko. And Sergey is calling us from Oregon, and where he is probably, what, the last 12 years being a raw foodist, and he is the founder of a company called Harmony Heights, which leads people on, it sounds like, absolutely delightful hikes in beautiful, pristine places for either a day or several days, where people forage for wild foods and eat raw foods and have a wonderful time out in nature. And Sergey is here today to talk to us about wild greens and how we can actually go out and forage for our food and save money on our grocery bills, and be eating probably the best and most nutritious foods that the planet has to offer. So with that, I will turn it over to Sergey, and let him talk a little bit about what he can do.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
So, there's so many places to start, I don't even know where to begin. Basically, in 1998, my family hiked from Mexico to Canada on the Pacific Crest Trail, and during that time, we had to pack 32 packages of food, which we mailed to ourselves, in order to have something to eat along the trail. And every 100 or so miles, the trail would lead us through a little town where we would pick up our own package at a post office and continue on walking. The only trouble is that we underestimated how much food five hungry hikers can eat in a week and started running into food shortages. And what I mean by this is we would hike about 4 days, and our food would completely run out, and we still had 3 more days to go before we got to the post office. So we had 2 choices, to either quit the trail or to improvise, and we chose the latter. And we did this by incorporating wild foods from the forest into our diet, and it worked out fabulously. Not only did we gain weight, which was completely absurd, we gained a lot of muscle weight. Every experienced hiker was told us that we were going to lose weight, but instead we gained healthy weight and just felt better than ever before in our lives and ate a lot of wild food. At times we were eating upwards to 60 or 70% of our diet from the forest, and that sort of got the ball rolling. Years later, we sort of put that on the back burner. And my mom started doing research in greens and how beneficial greens were. I'm sure many people have read Green for Life, the book. And I found my niche in the wild edible area, because what's better than green leafy vegetables? Free green leafy vegetables.
Absolutely.
I've made a list. I was flying to Australia to teach about wild edibles, and I had 22 hours to kill on the plane. I decided to spend 5 minutes of those 22 hours making a list of benefits of eating wild food. And the first one is, of course, that they're free. Feel free to interrupt me during any point if I'm going over, but
okay.
We advocate eating about 2 bunches of greens every day, and that's all dandy and everything, but many people can't afford that because, you know, a bunch of greens ranges anywhere from $2.50 to $5. And that same bunch of greens in Australia cost about $8.
Ouch.
So if you're eating 2 of those $8 bunches, that's $16 a day, and a lot of people don't have that kind of money. Well, wild edibles are free, so there's no excuse there. I also argue that wild is better than organic, because humans have never had time or will to destroy and make it worse. Have you ever noticed when humans come in contact with something and the quality severely goes down?
That happens.
So I argue that wild is better than organic because humans have never been able to fumble around with, you know, they don't spray it with pesticides and things like that.
And they don't genetically modify it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need. They don't
think
it's lucrative, and hopefully we'll keep them thinking that way. The other reason that they're good is because their roots are generally longer than those of, you know, your common lettuce or kale. And this is a huge benefit because our topsoil is getting very depleted in this day and age. And they say that the best organic tomato only has about 32 minerals in it, which isn't enough. We need about 90 to be completely healthy. Wild edibles not only grow in soil that hasn't been depleted because they're growing in the forest, but their roots are also longer, so they're able to go under that depleted topsoil and draw out those wonderful minerals that our bodies are deficient in. Let's see. Another health benefit of eating wild is that they're genetically healthier plants. You guys are in Georgia, right?
We're in Austin.
Yes,
well,
in Austin,
well, one
Texas.
Person on the call is in Georgia, but most of us are in Austin.
So in either of those places, if you don't water your lettuce during the summer for one day, what happens to it?
It fries.
It fries, right?
Exactly.
Why is it that dandelions or some other weed can grow right next to your lettuce, which you don't water, and it doesn't die?
That's true. Because it's down deeper to get to the water source.
It's down deeper, but I also argue that it's genetically stronger. And so it's just more adapted. It hasn't been hybridized over the years.
Yeah.
So it's the way that nature intended. And if the saying is true, you are what you eat, then I would argue that I want to eat genetically healthier plants to be genetically healthier myself.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
The next benefit, and there's about five more that I could think of off the top of my head, but the next huge one is that eating weeds offers us more food diversity, which is huge in this day and age. According to, let me see if I can remember the source. I can't right off the top of my head, but on average, the average American eats anywhere between 20 to 30 plants on an annual basis. And what I mean by this is all the food, if they calculate all the food that they eat in a year, all that food will only account for about 20 different types of food, like wheat and tomatoes, 20 different types,
wow,
which isn't very much.
Not enough.
And I travel around the world, I eat as many exotic fruits as possible, and I'm very lucky if I can get that up to 300. Well, one of my favorite authors, Daniel Mormon, he wrote a book called Native American Ethnobotany. He did research on how many different types of plants Native Americans ate, how many plants they used for medicine, and so on and so forth. He writes that they ate 1,882 plants every year.
Wow.
1,882 different types of plants. So I really believe that the first person who said, eat a balanced diet, he or she probably waved their hand and showed the person they were talking to the prairie, the mountains, the lakes, and said, eat a balanced diet, sort of encompass all of this, incorporate it into your food. And over the years, we've hybridized that concept too and made it into our little food pyramid. And I think many of the allergy problems that we have today are because we don't eat enough different types of foods.
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you for one second, Sergey.
Yeah.
Can everybody except for Sergey hit star 6 on their keypad? We're getting a little bit of an echo, and I'd like this recording to be clean. Thank you so much. Okay. Oh, that's much better. Go ahead, Sergey.
So food diversity is very important, in particular because all plants are toxic to some degree. Every plant, every food, like even a banana, has some sort of toxin in it. And if we let those toxins accumulate in our system, then we can develop allergies to that food and various other health ailments. For this reason, we always tell people to vary the greens that they put in their green smoothies and also vary the food that they put into their mouths on a daily basis. That's just one reason why food diversity is important. Let's see. Plus, where do weeds and wild edibles grow? They grow outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you step outside, you're automatically getting a few things for free. You're getting fresh air, you're getting exercise, and you're getting sunlight. So those are just a few benefits of eating greens, and if you didn't catch it the first time, all of that comes to you for free.
country. What do you know?
So I've been a huge advocate of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, all of this stuff, because people don't get enough fresh air. They spend their days in office buildings, and they put sunscreen on, and they, you know, their biggest exercise is walking to the car.
Mm-hmm.
So this is huge, and all for free. So do you have any more benefits that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. Better memory. A lot of people come to me and they say, well, we know that after 40 we're supposed to do crossword puzzles or things like Sudoku so that we ward off Alzheimer's, but we really don't like doing those things. Do you have any recommendations? Well, interestingly enough, when you're learning how to differentiate between a plant that's edible and another plant that might not be so edible, you're using those same brain waves, so you can throw away the crossword puzzles and just do that, so it improves your memory.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, scientifically, it's been proven that as soon as people look at nature, their heart rate and their cholesterol goes down. So that just by being around these plants, not even eating them, you are able to be more relaxed and alleviate stress. And that's a huge one
Wow.
for this day and age.
Where did you find that? That's wonderful information.
In fact, recently we were speaking at a lake, my sister and I, this beautiful lake town in Canada, and I was talking about this, and I said, hey, I bet you, I'd be willing to bet that your guys' heart rate is lower here than in the city. And this one guy raises his hand and says, he sort of chuckles and says, yeah, it's actually too low, we're trying to raise it.
Wonderful, what a great benefit.
So now you guys know the benefits, but for some reason we still don't like to eat wild foods, and why is that?
Well, some people find that they're more bitter than regular
They're more bitter,
foods.
Very good.
But another issue is not really knowing, so people are scared. People are afraid that they're going to eat something that's poisonous that's going to harm them.
Exactly. And that's huge. I think the fear accounts for probably 95% of the reason why we don't eat wild foods. And after the movie Into the Wild came out, at every class I get asked, well, what happened to that guy? He ate some, I think it was wild potato, and he died. Isn't that going to happen to me? When we're 5 years old, or even younger than that, our parents take us to the park, and we're still learning about our environment, and we might come across something like clover. Because when we're that age, we like to learn about our environment through taste, one of the things we're tempted to do is pick up that clover and stick it into our mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our parents, who may not know that clover is edible, they rush over and they give us a slap on the head or give us a talking to, and they scream, they say, don't eat that because it's poisonous. It'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the longer we hear this, the more and more we hear this, the more resistance we have to nature, the more we fear it. So now, not only are there mountain lions and bears in nature, but very evil plants that are out to get your kids. Lucky for us, though, I did the research, and there are relatively few plants that we shouldn't eat. There are about 150 plants that are classified as poisonous by the National Poison Control, and out of those 150 plants, there are only about 50, give or take one or two, depending on which area you live in, that you really shouldn't eat. And what I mean by this is 100 of them are mildly poisonous, and 50 of them are extremely poisonous. Why I'm talking about this is because when I found this out, I was very relieved. Because I thought, I'm going to have to learn thousands of plants, I don't have that kind of time, and you know, it's hard to memorize all of that stuff. When I found out there's only 50 plants that have the potential of killing me, I was very relieved because I can realistically learn 50 plants.
50 plants. And
if I learn the ones very well that I don't need to eat, the rest of them won't kill me, and that's already an encouraging thought.
That's, wow, what a great way to look at it, because that's some of the stuff that I've gone through. Oh, my God, there's hundreds of these, thousands of these. How am I going to learn all this? So,
yeah.
Wow, 50 I can learn.
Totally. I have a list of those 50 on my website, Harmony Hikes, under the Wild Edible page. That's just one of the things that you can find on that site. Furthermore, if you really take the time to look at each plant, you'll notice that they don't really look the same. And my wild edible teacher here on the West Coast, that's one of the reasons I like her over other people, is because she says, if you really take the time to look at each plant, you know, say you're learning how to differentiate dandelions or clovers, if you really take the time to look at each plant enough, and what I mean by enough is some plants it takes 10 seconds, other plants it takes 5 minutes, but you'll remember it for the rest of your life, and there will never, ever, ever be any doubt in your mind when you pick up a dandelion leaf that it's not a dandelion or that it is. So for those of you who are listening, how many know what a clover flower looks like?
Everybody's muted right now.
Okay, well.
Okay, so if we want to unmute yourself, we can go ahead and do that. And Trivial.
I'm just curious, yeah.
Yeah. And what was the question, a clover?
Yeah, what is, do you guys know what clover looks like?
I know what clover looks like.
Are you talking about the, like, actual clover piece itself, like the three-leaf clover or the four-leaf clover, or are you talking about a flower?
Both. Can you identify a clover with the flower and without?
Not with a flower, but I can identify a clover.
Well, very good. So for those of you who can't, here is your homework. It's going to take you 10 seconds. Get on the internet, get on Google, and search clover under the Google image tab. You'll get a few pictures, and then it's your job to go and look for a clover. You'll probably find it on your front lawn. When you found a clover, I encourage you to take one leaf off the plant, not the flower, just one of the three leaves, and hold it up to the light and look very closely at the edges. If you do this, you will see that the edges are slightly serrated. They have little spines on the tips that are very soft, but still they're there. And that is one identifying characteristic of a clover. So if you really take the time to look at a plant and look for all these minute characteristics, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. And clovers are very edible, mind you. They're good for things like cancers and cysts, for purifying the blood, for drawing out heavy metals like lead and mercury. And they grow everywhere. They don't even grow, you know, you don't even have to go to the forest to get them. They grow in your backyard.
Wow. So those little things, so all of the plants have these little characteristic traits that we can use to differentiate them from something that may look similar,
but
they have totally different effects.
Yeah. I remember the first time I went into the forest and somebody told me there's, you can eat from here. I thought, that's crazy. Everything looks the same. It's all green.
Uh-huh.
But now I go into the forest, and it's so different looking. Now I know what to look for, and I see that it's like a supermarket, an abundant supermarket, where you could differentiate the cucumbers from the bell peppers and the oranges from the apples.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you just eat the greens then and not the roots, or do you ever eat the roots also?
There are many roots that are very edible. However, I like to stick to the greens and the flowers because it's a sustainable way to eat. And what I mean by that is as the plant's helping me to get healthy, it's also keeping its roots intact so the plant can regrow its leaves and I can continue life for the plant.
Okay.
If I take the roots, that's the end of the plant.
Okay, thanks.
Plus, a lot of times the roots are more bitter anyway. And they're harder to get to.
Right, you need to be taking a shovel out there to be able to dig them up versus your hands suffice if you're foraging for the leaves.
So since this is a phone conversation, many people are probably going to want to know how to learn to identify weeds and wild edibles safely. And I definitely want to emphasize the word safely because while it's relatively safe, there's thousands of plants we can eat and only about 50 that we shouldn't. It's kind of like crossing the street at a crosswalk. I urge you that if you're crossing the street at a crosswalk, to still look both ways, even though you're in a relatively safe spot. So learn the toxic plants first, and then start branching out. But on my website, harmonyhikes.com, I've just started posting free videos, 3-minute educational clips about different plants, So, for instance, if we're learning about dandelions, I tell you what it is, what it's good for, where it's found, where it grows, how to harvest it, and at the end, I even show a recipe. So that's one really good way. Another good way is to buy a book. My book, Fresh, the new one, has wild edibles in it. I also recommend the book Discovering Wild Plants by Janice Schofield. Her last name spelled S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D. Discovering Wild Plants by Janice Schofield. And the last cheapest way to learn to identify plants is the internet. You can get on Google and search, you know, if you're in Austin, search 10 most edible plants in Austin, and you'll get a list of them, which is very convenient. You might want to double check it with a book just to be safe. But it's a great way to, the internet is a huge tool for this.
Mm-hmm.
You can even get pictures, which you can print off for free and take with you.
So if we're trying to learn these, you know, I get overwhelmed with thinking even 50, it's like, oh my God, I have to learn all 50, I have to have all this time. What would you suggest in terms of breaking it down? You know, can you easily learn 3 or 4 plants, you know, every time you go out, or just focus on one, or do you have any suggestions on that?
You know, what I did was I, every day, when I was learning the 50, I would just get on the internet and print, search for one of the plants, like poison hemlock, and I would print off a little picture and just put it in a place, like in my bathroom or above the computer where I was, you know, where I'd see it. In 50 days, I learned all 50 of them. Because one a day is pretty easy to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, you know, takes minutes. You don't really have to do anything other than print it off, because just looking at it when you check your email or go to the bathroom, it's there and it's in your mind.
Mm. That's a great idea for you. It makes it easy.
The other thing I should mention is those 50 plants are from North America altogether. So chances are, no matter where you live, you're probably only going to have to learn about 12 or 15. Because those 50 poisonous plants are from all the different ecosystems. And chances are where you live is not going to have all of them.
Right, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
So then if you could Google toxic wild plants in Austin, Texas, or
uh-huh.
Texas, Central Texas, which you think that would be a good way to know which ones are the ones to learn at first? Okay.
That's how I found out initially what the most toxic plants in Oregon were, where I live.
Okay.
Because the National Poison Control Center has lists for that for every city, if I'm not mistaken.
Great.
The other thing, let's just briefly mention, is sometimes there is this confusion about what's edible and what's not, based off certain biases and people's backgrounds. Like, I have several books. One is called Poisonous Plants. The other one's called Edible Plants, and they're written by different people.
Mm-hmm.
The Edible Plant book was written by a man who comes from a Native American naturalist background, whereas the Poisonous book was written by a guy who comes from a medical background. So what I noticed between the two books was that in the Poisonous book, a lot of the edible plants that the other guy lists are classified poisonous. And likewise, in the edible book, a lot of the plants that are classified poisonous in the poison book are classified edible.
Huh.
Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
This creates a lot of confusion as to what should and shouldn't be eaten. What I suggest about this, basically, what I've come to realize is that, like I was saying earlier, every plant is slightly toxic. Like, sometimes we call this alkaloid or oxalate. And if you're eating the truly edible ones, even though if they have a tiny bit of oxalates in them, if you're changing up what you're eating on a daily basis, you'll never have to worry about that, because your body will have that time to eliminate these oxalates and these toxins, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And in small quantities, they actually help fight cancer and do other things. So, just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. So, would you say that it's, you know, if you live in an urban, Austin has its pockets. It's mostly, you know, there's a lot of countrified areas right around it, but, you know, you can be in and close to the city. So it's not like, you know, where you live up in Oregon where it's a real pristine kind of place. So are there things that we should be careful about in terms of not the plants themselves, but in terms of the man-made kind of stuff?
Yeah, so, definitely. Even if you're harvesting very healthy plants from a city environment, you have to worry about pesticides and herbicides and other chemicals. For one, I had one lady who came up to me, I was talking about cattails, and she said, oh, I have cattails, and I live really close to the city, and it's just, you know, I look out my window, and I see those cattails, and I started getting suspicious, and I asked her where she lived, and it turned out that she lived on a golf course. So one place that you never, ever, ever, ever want to harvest from is a golf course. In fact, if you live near a golf course, I wouldn't harvest from your yard even, because the spray that they spray onto a golf course doesn't know boundaries and oftentimes floats past the golf course. But it is possible to safely harvest wild edible foods in the city. You just have to do a little bit of communicating. What I did here in Ashland is I went to the head office for the Parks and Recreation Division, and I found out which parks they didn't spray, and so then I go to those places to harvest plants. Also, I talked to my neighbors to figure out which ones that sprayed and which ones didn't, and it turns out none of them did, so I can safely harvest weeds right out of my backyard. And if neither of those two options are available for you, a really good thing to do is to start your own weed garden. As my sister and I are learning about weeds a few years back, we start realizing, well, why are we planting lettuce? Because it's not anywhere as nutritious and it's hard to cultivate. So what we did, we went onto seedsofchange.com. It's a seed bank. And we ordered whatever kind of weed seeds that we wanted that year. So we ordered stinging nettles and miner's lettuce, a bunch of different kinds. And we planted those instead of a garden.
Wonderful.
You don't even need a big garden space. You can plant them in little pots all over the place, and then you can have your own weed garden right on your windowsill. Okay. And it's totally safe. Yeah.
It saves time. Would you say that, would they differentiate between where these weeds would grow, or because they're weeds, they'll just grow anywhere, or? Well, not really.
Weeds generally like either to suck off the moist soil that you water, so oftentimes in your garden there will be lots of weeds. But the other thing that weeds like is disturbed soil. So anywhere where, you know, like for instance Malva, which I'm sure that you guys have in Texas, it likes to live around people because they disturb the soil and thereby aerate it. So a great place to look for weeds is vacant lots or ditches or prairies where the soil's sort of been messed with. So if you can think of any of those places, that's a great bet.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So somebody asked, like, how far away, she was asking how many, a creosote-laden telephone pole, is there something growing within 15 feet of that? Is that safe to use, or is that...
I would go 60 feet.
60 feet?
Yeah. The rule for railroad ties or, well, for railroad ties, it's probably even further than that. If you're living anywhere close to a railroad, they put some pretty toxic stuff on it, so I'd go further. But if you're, like, for instance, for roads, it's about 60 feet that you have to walk away from the road before you're considered safe.
Okay. Good. And she was also asking, do you think that some of the roots, would the roots go under the paved roads? If it's, so the 60 feet, they wouldn't obviously do.
No, they wouldn't go. Yeah, they wouldn't be that long.
Yeah. Great. Great. And you mentioned a little bit about the oxalates and tannins and, you know, so she was concerned about that in the wild.
Okay, well, here, let me elaborate on that. There's a guy out of Australia, his name's Tim Lowe. He wrote a bunch of wild edible books. And from one of his books, I was able to pinch this oxalate chart, and I'll just describe it to you real quick. Oxalate is one of those substances that if it accumulates in your body, it's you know, to a large extent, it's said to be lethal. And he has a list of all the things that contain oxalate: lettuce, cabbage, celery, parsley, rhubarb, spinach, beet leaves, dandelion, lamb's quarters, and purslane.
Mm-hmm.
And the figures, you know, they range from 1 milligram per a certain amount per cup to, you know, 0.007. And what this chart illustrates is that all of these things have oxalate in them. All these things that are even common in our diets, like lettuce and cabbage. He argues that we shouldn't not eat any of those plants simply because they have oxalate in them, because in small quantities, this oxalate is actually really beneficial for certain things, like killing cancer cells and other health benefits. But we should keep this in mind so that we vary our food so that we don't eat lettuce or cabbage every day and this oxalate accumulates. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes
maybe
sense.
I'm not elaborating well enough. So what I'm saying is you eat lettuce one day, and then the next day you eat kale, because kale's not on this list, and the next day you eat some broccoli, and you just keep varying it up so these oxalates never build up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Like, you've all heard that apple seeds have arsenic in them, and apricot kernels have cyanide. I even heard recently that that celery causes cancer. And all those things are true if you ate a bucket of celery or if you ate a pound of apple seeds. That wouldn't be good. But in small quantities, those arsenic and cyanide, they actually are really good for the body. In fact, we volunteered at Ann Wigmore Institute for 9 months, where we were not allowed to core an apple before juicing it, because they wanted the seeds to go in the juice to help all the cancer.
So there's good stuff in there, and I've heard stories like that where people thought, oh, there's some good stuff in the apple seeds. You know, we're going to collect the apple seeds and you know, could kill somebody with the,
yeah,
just the apple seeds, because first of all, it doesn't have the apple along with it, and second of all, you know, there's a huge amount of the cyanide in it.
Mm-hmm.
So variety is really what I hear, and Mom talks about that all the time, is variety. It's not doing the same thing over and over again, not finding this one food that you really, really like and just keep eating it constantly.
Because like I said, you can be eating something seemingly harmless like a banana, and if that's all you're eating, your body is not going to like that too much.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So, you know, you might, if you don't mind commenting, there are a lot of raw food type people that talk a lot about mono diets. We can eat one food at a meal, but is that more like eat the one food till you've gotten enough of it and then move on to another food? And does that make sense when you're talking about wild stuff?
I've tried many, many different types of ways to eat raw food, and I've tried the mono way, and I noticed I felt great for 3 months, and then I started shaking. And I didn't stop shaking until I just started eating the way I did previously, which is just a well-rounded, balanced diet. You know, and for me, I think balance is sort of the golden mean. I like to eat fruits. I like to eat greens. I like to eat a little bit of oil and some nuts and seeds and just mix it up. And I notice it constantly changes. Like when people ask me, what do you eat on a daily basis? It's always different. I noticed that in the summertime, I crave more fruits and greens and less nuts and seeds, whereas in the winter, I crave more nuts and seeds and less fruit.
That makes total sense, Sergey, because you're tuning into your body, and if you watch animals in nature whose taste buds haven't been thwarted like ours have, that's what they do. They move. You know, you see the deer, they munch a little bit here. They go to another plant, they munch a little bit there. They never eat an entire bush completely clean. They just go from one to the next to the next. And, and our needs are going to vary. In the summer, we do need more liquid. We need more lighter food. In the wintertime, we need more heaviness. We need more of the warming kind of foods, which are the heavier kind of foods, to keep us warm. So that's a really good point, is to just really tune into your body. And
plus, in the winter, if I lived in Oregon naturally without airplanes or cars, even if I wanted a piece of fruit, I probably couldn't eat much more than an apple.
Right.
Whereas nuts would be very much available.
Right. Yeah.
So it's also eating seasonally. Yeah,
locally
and locally.
And seasonally makes a lot of sense.
Which is huge. And while we're on the subject of eating locally, eating weeds is eating locally.
Is eating locally. That's
because right. Weeds grow where you grow, and there's lots of benefit in that too.
Right. Absolutely.
In my family, we've always been huge advocates for being your own test and being your own example.
Mm-hmm.
So that many people will come out and say, eat this way, it's the best way to eat, here's my book, you know, to some extent we do this too. But at the same time, we very much encourage people to try it on themselves and figure out what does and doesn't work. Because
mm-hmm.
really, in life, that's all we have.
Exactly.
You know, even if you go to a doctor, the doctor might have very, you know, many valuable things to say, but you can't say that he or she has been with you for however many years that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of variables there, and the only person that really knows you is you.
Absolutely.
So try eating mono and try eating not mono and figure out what works best, and that's going to be the only proof that you need.
Right. Right. And as far as food combining, which a lot of people do, I don't really find it easy to encompass and do, but... Wild greens would go with everything, right? I mean,
they go with everything. Many people confuse the green smoothie message to mean combining vegetables and fruit, and that is not the case at all. We're talking about green leafy vegetables, which shouldn't really even be classified as vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you look into botany, you'll notice that there really isn't a category called vegetables. Because if you really get down to the nitty-gritty, what is a cucumber? It's a fruit. What is a bell pepper? It's a fruit. What is a tomato? That's a fruit, too. What's a what's an avocado? That's a fruit.
Yeah.
So what then is a vegetable? And so when we refer to vegetables in my family, we're talking about root vegetables, things like carrots and beets and celery root, turnip, rutabagas.
Mm.
So we try to be as clear as we can about this, that it's a bad idea to combine those types of root vegetables with fruit,
mm-hmm.
because you'll get things like upset stomachs and gas. But green leafy vegetables, things like weeds, like leaves, kale, lettuce, those are perfectly combined with fruits. You won't have any problems. Even if you look at a food combining chart, it doesn't disagree.
It doesn't disagree. Wonderful. I think we've mostly hit all the questions that were submitted. Do you have anything more you would like to add before we open up the line for questions?
I've been talking about everything I needed to talk about. If you guys are interested to learn more, like I said, check out my website, Harmony Hikes. We offer day hikes, and we also have 3 beautiful extended hikes that we're doing, and they're filling up quick. They're going to be fun. But if you live far away, I completely understand. Log on, and there's a bunch of free stuff on there that you can access from wherever you are. HarmonyHikes.com.
Yeah, it's a beautiful website for you. It's just lovely. So tell us a little bit about the hikes. What would one expect to see on an extended hike? What would that be like?
An extended hike is a very exciting event for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We pack up our backpacks and hit the trail for 4 days and 3 nights. We not only eat lots of gourmet food that I prepare ahead of time, but we heavily supplement all our meals with wild edibles.
Mm-hmm.
So we make all the other hikers in the forest that we see very jealous because they're eating their mountain house dried, you know, casserole that just looks like powder and water, and we're eating these beautiful lettuce wraps or these nori rolls. Lots of lakes and rivers to swim in. We play lots of games. We just absorb and relax in the Oregon sunshine. Turns out to be a very special, relaxing event. I bring out slack lines, which is it's a balancing exercise.
Mm.
Sort of, if you log onto the website, you'll see us doing it on the photo page. But it's essentially like a tightrope, except it's loose, and you practice balancing on it. Of course,
wow.
We help you in the beginning, but it's a very good meditation, if you will.
So do you get families, or do you get mostly adults, or is it a mixture?
You know, it's a mix. Last year, one of the hikes I went with ranged from 16, which is sort of my... I don't like to take people that are under 16 on the extended hikes.
Mm-hmm.
So we had from 16 to 65.
Wow,
that was
wonderful.
A strong.
So
and everybody
like
did great.
Vacation.
Yeah?
Come out to Oregon, hook up with Sergey, and go out on a wonderful vacation.
And after the hike, we go touring for just half a day, sort of as a finale, to either visit Crater Lake, which is the deepest lake in the United States, second deepest in the world, and it's right outside our back door. Or we go to see some huge waterfalls and go to what I call the Water Works Tour, where there's natural water slides made out of moss, and it's just a summertime playground.
Wow. Sounds wonderful. Sounds absolutely wonderful. Yeah. We'd like to hear more about your book.
Okay.
You said you have some wild edible recipes in there, and I did get to read a preview copy of your book in what I thought was a wonderful book.
So this is our baby as of, you know, we've been working on it for about a year, my sister and I, and it just came out 3 weeks ago. It's called Fresh, the Ultimate Raw Food Cookbook. And it started off just by, you know, a publishing company saying, well, we liked your book, Eating Without Heating, so much that we want more recipes. Plus, our recipes have evolved and been perfected over the 15 years that we've been eating raw food. So that was sort of the basic guideline, but then we started throwing all this other stuff into it that we're into. Like my sister has a whole chapter on helping kids to maintain and eat healthfully. We have a chapter about how it's important to communicate well with your loved ones who may or may not be eating raw food, because all the time we see relationships fail, marriages end because of the raw or cooked debate. We think that's really sad because food is definitely important, but it's not the most important thing. You know, obviously you guys got together for a reason that was outside of food, because you found that love. And we just, you know, elaborate on how to maintain that open communication so that that doesn't happen. And then we also have a huge section on the most common wild edibles of the world that are found everywhere, things like dandelion and clover and miner's lettuce, with recipes at the end that are very tasty.
Wonderful.
So it's kind of a big melting pot of things, but it turned out to be, I think, our best book that we wrote so far.
Oh, great. Well, that's saying a lot, too. And could you make a few comments? I know it's off the subject of wild edibles, but just for the people out there who do have kids and teenagers who are maybe resistant to changing their diets and incorporating more raw foods and the whole peer pressure thing, because, you know, you went through that. So if you could have just a few words of wisdom for those of us who are out here exploring that piece.
I would like to quote my sister Valia on that, if I may. She says, if you want your kid to eat well, but they don't when you tell them to, that's a great thing. Do you really want your kids to comply mindlessly, to say, okay, Mom, and just do it? If they're resisting, I think that's a really good trait and sign, because later on, that'll essentially mean that they'll have more power to resist other things in life, and I think that's a beautiful thing. So instead of just droning it into their head and saying, eat more of this, eat more of this, the best thing that you can do is be a good example and eat that way yourself. Because that's how parents teach their kids, whether it's conscious or subconscious. In Mother Nature, a mama bear will teach her cubs what to eat by walking around, putting the food that's edible into her mouth, and then showing her kids, letting them smell right from her mouth and even eat right from her mouth the food that's edible. So she tells them, here, this is edible, you can eat this. I think in one sense, humans aren't that different, because kids definitely take on what their parents eat. I mean, even if they don't realize it. I had a friend over recently who I made a salad with, and I put tomatoes in the salad, and he said, oh, I don't like tomatoes. I said, why don't you like tomatoes? And thought about it. Nobody had ever asked him that before. He said, because my dad doesn't like tomatoes. He didn't even have a good reason. So being an example is really the best way to teach. And it also helps to help them understand why you want them to eat raw food, because a lot of times kids don't know. They just, it's never been explained to them. Their parents don't eat raw food, but they don't know why, and that's how my parents got me to maintain a healthy diet, was because they sat me down and they said, hey, you have diabetes. I was 9 years old when I was diagnosed. And this is really serious. This means
five.
That... some of your dreams that you have, like being a firefighter, might not be realized because you need your health for that. And we really think that if you eat this way, you'll be able to feel better so you can realize more of your dreams. And that started to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, given the what's in it for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you for your perspective and sharing all this wonderful information. And I'd like to open up the line. If there's anybody that has a question, please just state your name, and we'll acknowledge that we hear you, and then go ahead and ask Sergey a question.
Sergey?
Uh-huh.
I live in an apartment, and you've got me all excited. I would love to be able to order from Seas of Change or wherever to get started,
uh-huh.
And I guess just start a little box on my patio. I'm actually on the website right now for Seas of Change.
Okay.
Can you recommend a good start for certain weeds, I guess, that I can grow here in Texas?
I would say lamb's quarters, malva. Malva's really delicious. Purslane, that's a really good one. Stinging nettles are awesome, and you can actually, stinging nettles implies that they have stingers on them, so you can get stingless nettles. I think Seeds of Change has those, and they're very nutritious. They help to alleviate allergies. They're really good for lowering blood sugar. Just tons of health benefits, good for arthritis and other joint problems. So, yeah, look that up, stingless nettles, and you can just blend them in a green smoothie the way that you do any other greens. Let's see what else.
So there is a stinging nettle and a stingless nettle?
Yeah, exactly. And they're in the same family. It's just that one you'll have to pick with gloves, and the other one you can pick with your, you know, bare hands.
Okay.
You can get the stinging nettles and throw that in a smoothie, because once you blend it up, you won't be stung or anything. The needles get destroyed.
Hmm.
So
that's good to know.
Up to you. So purslane, lamb's quarters, malva. Malva is in the okra family, so it tastes very delicious. Stingless nettle, dandelion. I think it's pretty crazy to buy dandelions because they grow all over the place. So I would just find a place where they're where they haven't been sprayed, and then just transplant them into a pot. I know that sounds equally crazy, huh? Transplanting dandelions. But they're very nutritious. They promote emotional satisfaction. They alkalize the body. They help our liver and kidneys. That bitter taste is really good for stimulating bile and thereby cleaning our inner organs. What else do? They lower cholesterol and your heart rate. They're loaded with nutrients and vitamins. They even have B12 in them. So there's the great B12 debate is, how do you get your B12 if you don't eat meat? Well, wild edibles have B12 in them, according to many people. It's not just something that I'm making up.
Hmm. Is it, could you say a few words about the importance of not washing them when you grow them?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the reasons that we're deficient in B12 is because we live in a society that thinks that something is healthier for you if it's double wrapped in plastic, because somehow we've been convinced that that's cleaner. Well, if you're growing your food from organic soil in an environment free of pesticides, it's actually very beneficial to underwash your plants, the food that you eat. And a few years back, I always wondered why I was so drawn to a mildly dirty carrot. Like when I pulled it out of my own garden and I took all the huge clumps of dirt off of it, I didn't really feel like washing it. I just wanted to eat it with a little bit of that grit on it. And I later found out that this is a natural tendency, because organic, nutrient-rich soil has not only very healthy bacteria, things like acidophilus and other things that are good for our bodies, but it's also rich in B12. So that's dirt. You know, when they say God made dirt and dirt don't hurt, that can be taken literally. Some people actually... Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, soil, I'm really excited about this, and I want to get started, and I could probably find this on the change, but what kind of soil would you recommend, would I get it from them?
You know, even better than Seeds of Change would be to just get on the internet and wherever you live, figure out if there's a local seed bank, because that way you could stimulate your local economy a little bit. And those plants that you get from the local source will grow better in your environment anyway and be more nutrient rich. Just go to an organic nursery for the soil, and they usually have really good potting soil.
There's a place here in town, which on the south side, and it's called the Natural Gardener, and it's an organic.
Oh, great!
And they may have them.
And that once again is the beauty of the internet, because if you don't know where to look, just get on Yahoo or to Google and search, you know, Atlanta, Georgia seed bank, or organic farming in Atlanta, and you'll get more results than you know what to do with. So then you just map quest them to figure out which one's closest and go check them out.
Yeah.
When you were talking about picking them and not getting the roots, you just pinch them off, I guess, from the stem, and then it'll continue to grow from there?
Yeah.
And that way you don't have to keep replanting if you're growing your own?
Totally.
Okay, cool. Because everybody around me sprays. There's no way I could pick out what's anywhere near me.
And the good thing about that is a lot of people spray because they think that they have to, and nobody has ever told them otherwise. When my neighbor saw me eating dandelions from my front lawn, they thought I was crazy at first, but finally, one day they got the courage to ask me what I was doing, and when they figured it out and I told them, and I also told them all the benefits of dandelions, they no longer thought I was crazy. They were like, wow, we got to try that. And since then, they've stopped spraying their lawn.
I do have to say, I love what Valia said, though, as far as for getting kids and teens to eat raw. My husband and I just had that conversation this morning just about raw in general and people's attitudes towards it, and we both agreed that it's really what your attitude is to start with. If you act like you're left out or like you're different or whatever, then people are going to treat you that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you act confident in what you're doing, they're going to say, oh, really? Tell me more.
Exactly. You know, and I thought about that very thing a lot, because people constantly ask me, you know, well, what do you do when you're, not just kids, what do you do when your coworkers sit down for lunch with you and you pull out your green smoothie and then it gets all awkward?
It doesn't get awkward for me.
Exactly. So here's the deal. It's all in your head. That's what I've come up with, because I recently started salsa dancing. A year and a half ago, I started dancing salsa, and the first night that I went out dancing, I was like, wow, everybody's looking at me, and I'm doing so bad, and look at all these people are dancing better than me. And there's this couple that was looking at me the whole time, and I'm like, oh, they're judging me. So a year goes by, I get better at salsa, and that couple that was looking at me initially comes up to me and says, you know, you've always been such a great dancer from day one. And so in my head, I made it up to be something that it wasn't. It was like such a scary thing, but really the only person that was making it awkward was myself.
Yeah.
It's all make-believe.
Yeah.
You know, we have these beliefs about things, but where did the beliefs come from? Really, we made them up, and we can make up new beliefs. And
yeah.
So if you've got a belief that's been with you for a long time, like, oh, eating this way is weird and people are going to think me odd, you can just decide that you're going to make believe it's different. And you're going to create a new belief, and that will become your new reality.
And kids pick up on that, too. Because if you act like it's the most normal thing, and it's fun, and it's great with your kids, when other people ask them, they're going to do the same thing with their friends.
Yeah.
I've had more of my kids' friends want to come to our house. And, oh, you get to have a banana split chocolate cake for breakfast? I'm coming to your house, you know, type thing. And
I have a question for Sergey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I missed the first few minutes of the call, so you may have covered it, but I wondered about if in your new book or just in general what you recommend in terms of edible flowers.
Edible flowers, there's so many that I don't even know where to start. Nasturtiums, clover flowers are very easily accessible all over the place. Strawberry flowers from either wild or cultivated strawberries are very edible and very delicious. You know, get on the internet again and just find edible flowers in your area. You'll get a whole list with pictures.
Great, thanks. Wonderful. So we're jealous at this time. I'm jealous of you at this time of year. Don't you have all those wild blackberries growing, like, abundantly everywhere you go?
They're going to start, very shortly. And it's funny that you mention that, because when we lived in California, we always used to buy blackberries. So when we got to Oregon and bought some here, people laughed at us because blackberries are the state weed, so they grow all over the place, and people hate them. They throw them away. I guess the grass is always greener on the other side, right?
Oh, my God. And they're $3.99 a pint or a half pint here in Austin this time of year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
They're four something here, and that's the DeKalb Farmers Market, which is known for good prices.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And you can eat those in 5 minutes. They're down. They're gone. Exactly. And like, oh, my God.
But
yeah,
still, you know what? My mom just went to Russia for the first time in 17 years, and a half a pint of raspberries or blackberries is $150 there.
Oh, no.
Oh! So that puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Yep.
So eating for free sounds really good. So maybe going out and spending a week out in Oregon and picking wild blackberries and going on one of Harmony Heights tours would be a wonderful vacation.
I couldn't put that better.
All right. Well, if anybody else has, we have time for one last question, and then we will wrap it up. Anybody?
I'm not here every day.
you've got it here.
Do you go to other places? If somebody can get a group of people together, do you go to other places and lead hikes also?
I'm starting to because I'm getting more and more demands for this. And like this weekend, I'll be traveling away from Oregon and going to Central California to lead three hikes. It is a possibility. I haven't quite figured out how to do it because to do a hike in a place, I need to sort of get there ahead of time and try and find a place where we can hike and then figure out what...
You can always crash at my house. My home is always open. Ask Pam.
Yes,
okay.
It is.
So I'm not saying no, but I'm saying that I'm still in the process of figuring out how this is all going to work.
I'm so glad you asked that question. Count me in if it makes it awesome.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. I can easily get you. How many people would you need? What do you usually take, like 12 people out there?
No more than 20, because then it gets kind of hectic.
We could get 20 people together.
Absolutely.
Oh, no problem at all.
Absolutely.
I will keep that in mind. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
You been to Austin?
I have.
Okay.
Well, come
it's
again.
Very beautiful.
We'll
I like
put
it.
You up and be very hospitable to you and feed you lots of good raw foods and show you where to pick the greens.
Sounds great. Maybe this fall or winter, because it won't be as hot there.
Right. You know, actually, October is a really nice fun. September, October is really nice fun. It can get too cold in the winter. Every now and then, actually.
Uh-huh.
You know, you never know how to predict it. It could be 75 for several days, and then it could be 35 for several days. Well, Sergey, we really appreciate you being here. You've been a wealth of information, very inspirational. I always love to hear you talk, and I encourage everyone to go out and visit theharmonyhikes.com and check out the videos and the resources and the pictures, and you're a wonderful resource, and we really appreciate you being here and doing all the work that you've done with this and really having this passion that you can share with the rest of us.
Well, thank you guys very much for listening to me and for supporting myself and my family. Big help.
Wonderful.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.